Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam to you, dear brother, dear sister, in faith and humanity. So welcome. You are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, which in this program we're going to speak about turning setbacks into success. So be with us. Today is Thursday, 25th of Rabiul Awwal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 27th of Shahrivar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 18th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As the ritual of this program, first we open the Holy Quran, we listen to one ayah and learn more about it. For today, we listen to chapter Al-Imran, verse 92.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Lan tanalul birra hatta tunfiqu mimma tuhibbun. وَمَا تُنْفِقُوا مِنْ شَيْءٍ فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ بِهِ عَلِيمٌ
Never will you attain the good reward until you spend in the way of Allah from that which you love. And whatever you spend, indeed Allah is knowing of it.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
As it is understood from Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 177, believe in Allah, believe in the resurrection day, and believe in prophets, helping the indigent, prayer and fasting to fulfill the promise and to be steadfast in confronting with problems and adventures, all in all are counted the branches of righteousness. Therefore, to attain the rank of righteousness needs many qualities. One of those qualities is spending out from the possessions that are loved by that person. This kind of giving charity is a standard for measuring the faith and personality of the person.
You are the way of love. Chosen to teach us the words of Allah, mercy and kindness and hope for everyone. Peace be upon you, O Muhammad.
The topic of this episode of today's special is turning setbacks into success. One question, think about it. Are you constantly at war with yourself? Do you kick yourself when you lose the promotion or are passed over for a raise? If you do, that's like attacking the fire department when your house is on fire. Whose side are you on, anyway? If you really want success, put down your gravel and start supporting yourself like you would your best friend, baseball great Babe Ruth. Arguably one of the best ball players of all time, said, "Every strike brings me closer to the next home run. Don't be too quick to give up and don't take no fear an answer. Brainstorm ways to turn a no into a yes. Every loss contains a gain if you look for it. I have to pay more taxes this year than ever before becomes I made more money this year than I've ever made. Yeah?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to today's special. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about how to turn failure into success. In the early days of Islam, there were many problems and difficulties when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam saw his followers starved and tortured. He must have felt like he had failed them, and that his mission, far from being success, seemed to be doomed to failure. However, because of his faith in Allah, he knew that these problems had to be faced and that he had to learn something from them. When things got so bad that many of the new Muslims could stand no more, he sent them away to Abyssinia. This was not defeat, nor was it failure. It was a chance to regroup and try different tactics. It was a chance to ponder and learn lessons and make different plans. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam knew that no matter what difficult situation a person is forced by circumstance, and he will, and the will of Allah to endure it will not last forever. You are able to move past it with difficulty or with ease, but it will come to an end.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
So in this part of today's special, we'll look at the benefits of failure. Failure can help you identify any flaws or weaknesses you have in being able to accomplish specific goals. Once identified, you can work on them until those flaws or weaknesses become your strength. Other way to encounter the failure is looking at them or looking at failure as inspiration. Albert Einstein once said, "Insanity, doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results." Failure forces you to rethink your approach and try something new.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? Doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone. Anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Come here, we have some ways to turn failure into success, and one of them is learning to grow from difficulties. Rather than viewing challenges and setbacks as obstacles, they should be seen as opportunities to learn and develop. Take a moment to reflect, breathe, and acknowledge the mistakes or missteps. Documenting things, setbacks through writing can be a transformative practice, enabling individuals to confront and overcome them with determination. It also helps them too. Other ways. Organize your emotions and thoughts. Identify areas for improvement, and making targeted changes is another way.
subhanahu wa ta'ala says, I have created mankind with one direction, with one purpose, with one objective. That objective is tawheed, is monotheism, is fulfillment of a goal that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has created this universe and the human beings within it for. Yes? And therefore, this objective cannot be infused with other. Meaning, falsehood and righteousness cannot coexist. Meaning, nifaq and iman cannot coexist. Meaning, batil and haq cannot be together in one existence. Yes? You cannot have both somehow cohabiting within the existence of the human being. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, I have not created two hearts. It means your heart is either good or your heart is either bad. You must choose which one. And you must work to fulfill one. You cannot say, I love some of these and I love some others. I am surprised. Sometimes, I see on social media, on Facebook, some of our youth. You have sections where you like some pages. So they like some videos, say they like some movies, they like some things. So they like some pages, Nahjul Balagha, Quran, very well, beautiful. Underneath, some musicians, famous pop stars and rock stars. How can you like Ali ibn Abi Talib and like X, Y, and Z without mentioning their name on the minbar? Yes? How can that? Allah says that cannot happen. You cannot have these two because it is مَا جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لِرَجُلٍ فِي قَلْبَيْنِ مِنْ جَوْفِهِ. The Urafa, the mystics, they give an interesting figurative story. They say there is a man who was known as Majnoon, crazy. Yes, because he has a special desire or a crazy attraction towards his beloved, which her name was Layla or Layli. It is very well known in Iran, this folk tale, very well known. One day, this Majnoon, he wanted to go and meet his beloved. So he had the she-camel. This she-camel had just given birth. It had just given birth. When he would ride on the she-camel and would direct it to go to the other village in order to meet his beloved Layla, he would fall asleep on the way. When he would fall asleep, the she-camel would turn and go back to the original village where they left because it had its baby there. So he wakes up. He says, why am I back? Then he turns and directs the camel to go to where he wants to. And this happened several times until he gave up. He came down from the camel. He looked at it and says, this is never going to work. Your heart is with your baby and my heart is with my lady. We have separate, our hearts cannot join. I have one objective. You have a separate objective. The camel doesn't want me to go there. Yes. Similarly, the heart can only have one focus. The heart can only have one objective. The heart can only have one direction.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we'll meet you soon. Till then, fi amanillah.
They told me that I'm crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside, I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Impatient and longing to meet my beloved. My steps quicken, my heart beats. touch each inch as I pass, hoping to absorb his light into my heart. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Adorned by your beauty, giving my tears in plea, forgive me. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. To the ground, all is calm. Now I feel at peace. No sound amongst these millions, only I can hear my heart beat. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Bags are packed, yet I can't sleep. I yearn the streets of my Rasul. He is my love, please let me be. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the Yemeni missile response to the aggression that targeted the port of Hodeidah. It also focused on the Arab and Islamic summit in Doha and allowed the systematic campaign against the Qatar. Meanwhile, the consequences of war of destruction on Gaza and the ongoing assaults on the West Bank remain the main focus of Israeli analysts' comments. These topics will be the subject of discussion in this episode with Ms. Leila Hatoum, Editor-in-Chief, MENA Uncensored, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Leila.
Hello.
There is now a conviction within the Israeli occupation that the war on the Gaza Strip will not achieve its goals despite the brutal attack on Gaza City, and that assassinating leaders of the resistance and Hamas cannot mean victory because the leader who is martyred will be immediately replaced by another. Leila, to begin with, could this Israeli assassination policy, in your own opinion, backfire against the Israelis by making the resistance even more, the resistance movement even more resilient?
But think about it this way. Whenever they assassinate a leader, and as you said, there's some truth to it. If you don't directly engage in a political discussion or negotiations towards ending the war, then they will have to meet or face new leaders that they don't know anything about their background. They've already known Sinwar for the longest time. They know his moves. They know the way he thinks, but they couldn't pinpoint him. When they eliminate him, there's somebody else who's going to replace his position. And that person, they have to study him all over again. And that will take time. And that means dragging on war. And that means more casualties for the Israelis. And true, the new leaders sometimes, though not basically radical, but what they have is like they would be more adamant at taking revenge. And that causes Israel more problems. And in that sense, we could see that Netanyahu putting sticks in wheels when it comes to negotiations hurts the army more
than
anything
else. Could they learn from the mistake of their predecessors?
No, I don't think the Israelis are going to learn from anything, because they are an entity that lives and thrives on killing the natives, killing everybody, eliminating anybody.
The resistance leaders talking about.
Definitely. So at the end of the day, when they eliminate resistance leaders and there are new ones coming, they take them as an excuse to launch further wars to take over more land and kill more people.
Okay. And of course, with all these factors that we're highlighting throughout the report, but it's not stopping Israel from committing more assassinations.
I mean, well, the thing
whenever
is...
Whenever they feel it's necessary.
No, definitely. But as I said, I mean, the Israelis will take the excuse that the new leader is more radical to launch further wars, to kill more people, to take over more land. Remember that the current Israeli government, for the past, let's say, a year and a half, and even from the past, all Netanyahu's governments were a coalition of right-wing groups. Right-wing groups, they don't care about anybody else in the Israeli entity. What they care about is creating greater Israel. Mm-hmm. And that's their goal. So, like, basically, they want to launch more wars. They need wars to actually expand.
Okay. Israeli social media, however, reacted to the escalation of the war of destruction in Gaza City. Here are some of the comments.
Tom Yigayen: Netanyahu no longer hides the fact that we are turning into a Spartan state. His statements that we have no choice but to wage war on Gaza are propaganda. What happens in our lives is not destiny, but the result of policies that can be changed. Hudi Argov: Netanyahu has brought Israel into an escalating disaster that will destroy Israel if he continues destroying Gaza. Roni Itam: what do you think will happen to Israel's foreign relations when it enters another round of war in Gaza that could last until 2030?
Despite the global and Arab campaigns of condemnation and denunciation of the Israeli aggression on Qatar, Hebrew media still focuses on the importance of this aggression for the Israeli entity with pride that is expressed by a former Knesset member. Leila, do you agree that the timing of this aggression on Qatar, in one way or another, is linked to the war on Gaza City coming to an end?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you have to understand one thing. There are certain people who believe that Qatar was complicit in this attack. There is a growing tension and restlessness among the populations of the countries that claim that they support the resistance, and they haven't seen anything from their governments doing anything on the ground to support that resistance at the end of the day. And if you're going to tell me that the Americans who gave a green light to this operation and the Israelis who actually flew over, even through their missiles, none of those were detected, the missiles or the planes, by the radar system in Qatar. That tells you one thing. Either somebody from the inside did what you call kill switch on all the radars and all the air defenses, or they were complicit in the beginning. And that means the Qatari leadership in front of their people will come out and say, like, we're victims as well. So you can't go against us. You have to go against the Israelis and everybody who basically put it this way. Those people actually support their narrative by saying, and I actually tend to mm-hmm. go with that narrative, that the Israelis, if they wanted to kill the first-tier leadership, the political leadership of Hamas in Qatar, in that residential area that's not highly fortified, they would have done so easily. But they
so
didn't.
They didn't want to?
Well, look at it. They managed to assassinate Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in a bunker that's totally fortified. They could have easily, they took out Sheikh Saleh Al-Arouy in an apartment inside the Beirut southern suburbs with two missiles. They couldn't take down the whole leadership.
So what's the point?
It gives what you call, it absolves the Qatari leadership in front of their people. That's one thing. The other thing is that it directly pushes the current political leadership of Hamas towards accepting certain pressures when it comes to the negotiations the American offer.
And they want the Qataris to pressure Hamas,
well, the
especially when it comes to the captives? That's what
the
you're
Qataris
saying?
Would tell Hamas leadership, political leadership, we cannot protect you for so long, you accept the rules and that's it. And this is how Qatar would walk away as the peacemaker. Hamas will have to cave in because they don't want to lose their lives. I mean, we're talking about the political leadership, not the military leadership over here.
Yeah, but will Qatar agree to this?
Well, look what happened. None of the air defenses nor the radar system actually stopped any of those missiles. But everybody made a commotion, including Qatar, about the Iranian missiles that only hit Al Adeid military base.
Do you think that's a Qatari decision or it's an American decision to stop these radars?
To think that it's a Qatari decision, that means Qatar has sovereignty over its own decision-making process, and this is not true. When you have the largest U.S. Air Force military base in the region, in Qatar, and when you have another U.S. military base in Qatar, and you have the Americans telling the Qataris since day one until today who they should meet with or negotiate with, that tells you that the Qatari decision-making process is not sovereign as they try to claim.
Okay. Does this aggression, Leila, really mean that Israel is an undisputed regional superpower, in your opinion? Or could this end up being a catastrophic mistake for Israel by that will lead to its international or regional isolation?
It's not undisputed. It is disputed by Iran, by the resistance in Lebanon, the resistance in Yemen, the resistance in Iraq, the resistance in Palestine. But it has the upper hand because it flies with impunity over international law and anything else. It is protected by the Americans and NATO powers. So at the end of the day, it's not a regional superpower. It's an enabled power in the region. We saw with the Iranian hits against the Israelis during the 12-day war, the Israelis couldn't stop any of those hypersonic missiles. Even the Yemeni missiles, they can't stop them. So that means they're not super as they try to claim, but they have a lot of supporters, and those are the ones who are defending it.
And what did they lose by this? And that's one of the major thing that I was asking. This is, will this lead to its regional isolation? Because there are a lot of reports coming in speaking about that.
Well, sadly, the thing is there's a growing international isolation from the populations themselves. Mm-hmm. But regionally, it's not. It's actually going the other way around, and that shows Arab complicity. We saw a meeting between the Organization of Islamic States, the Arab League, and basically the Gulf Cooperation Council, all in one summit, major summit happening in Qatar, to support Qatar against the attacks that happened against it immediately, unlike what we saw with the case
yeah,
of Gaza,
but
right?
Again, but
so, no, mm-hmm. But like when you look at the whole situation, the Arabs all are speaking about the peace process with the Israelis when the international community population are speaking about cutting
but
off
nothing
Israelis.
Caught your attention in this Arab summit that took place. We've seen how these Muslim countries join together in one force against the Israeli act, and we've also seen the involvement of the Egyptians.
No.
And also Iran, who was designated as an enemy by these countries, they came together as one force.
No, they came together to support Qatar over the table, but they all spoke about the peace process. They all spoke about if Israel wants peace, we're ready to go and talk. None of them said we're going to take measures to stop the Israeli entity. Did they take any measures on the ground or say that we're going to take these measures or anything? Did they name any measures? No. They only condemned, and this is what expected, and they basically broke the whole thing.
But the tone was different, especially from the Egyptian president this time around.
Does he dare say anything else in front of his constituency? Talk is very cheap. Again, talk is
he
very
never
cheap.
Spoke in that language, Leila, before.
Okay, so
don't you see it as a development in the political speech?
Well, do you think that the Palestinians are going to survive on statements?
Mm-hmm.
Action is needed. So if Sisi doesn't open the borders, allowing the Egyptians to march towards Gaza, or at least have the Egyptian army stop the Israelis from taking over the Philadelphia corridor, which they actually handed over without a single bullet shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes over and he cries over Palestine, or he cries over what's happening, or he denounces the Israelis. How is that going to help the Palestinians? Huh? Oh.
Okay. Do you see it as a beginning for a new era on how to deal with the Israelis? It begins with a political talk and then ends up with the actions that you're highlighting?
No. The way I see it is basically that those people have already normalized ties with the Israelis above and under the table. They're doing mere theatrics in front of their constituency.
Yes.
And going forward, they will basically try to normalize ties as much as possible.
Okay. However, the Israeli aggression on Qatar, although supported by all Israelis, may lead to disrupting security cooperation between Tel Aviv and some Arab states, especially the normalization states like the UAE and Bahrain. Do you think that the Israeli fear of disrupting security cooperation, of course, between the occupation entity and some Arab states and the normalization states is justified at one point?
There's no Israeli fear on this matter. Above the table, they would say, like, oh, we fear that our relations might be disrupted, but they have these Arab states in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
They've already signed agreements with them. They have the GCC money pouring into investing in the Israeli entity and Israeli-owned companies. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars worth of investments. Those people are not going to back off. But there's something wrong with this comparison. They're comparing an assassination on the ground that happened in 2010. That's the assassination of Al-Makhouh in Dubai, right? The international outcry was because the Mossad agents were pinpointed as using forged what you call foreign passports, Canadian, Australian, etc. That's why the Australians and the Canadians and Austrians, like basically I think there was another nationality, they were angry about it because that jeopardizes their own citizens who are traveling with normal passports to the UAE, among other places, because everybody will look at them, oh, are you part of the Mossad or not?
Mm-hmm.
So that case was completely different than the case of hitting Iran, where the Israelis said, we did it, they did it above the table, and they had backing from international community. I mean, like there would be a denouncement, but not pulling out, let's say, disrupting what you call diplomatic ties, like we saw between Australia and Israel at one point.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it came to Dubai, I mean, this time, the only country among all of the GCC nations was not the UAE, but the emirate within the UAE, that's Dubai. Because of what happened in Qatar, Dubai decided to suspend Israel's participation in November, this year's November air show. So at the end of the day, this is kind of what you call, if you do something, we're going to hit you on the hand.
Yes.
But that's the maximum.
But another scenario says that maybe the UAE sees it as a good thing what happened to Qatar. Maybe it's a good chance so that they can have their own personal benefits of what they're dreaming of.
I highly doubt that they would see any benefits. I mean, like, if you remember, there was a long row between the UAE and Qatar between 2015 and 2021. And they put Qatar into
isolation.
But
there was also a lot of disputes between the two countries.
But things they put,
especially when it comes to regional political
matters.
Yeah,
but they put Qatar into an isolation. The Emiratis, the Saudis, and the Bahrainis, they put Qatar into isolation during that period.
Yes.
But then they mended fences, as you call it. And remember, those families, like the I'm going to call them the imperial families, the royal families of the GCC, they are all intermarried. So at the end of the day, they will solve their differences at one point in time. What I'm looking at the moment is that they want to show Qatar that they support it.
Mm-hmm.
Above the table, so they take these measures like the one we saw with Dubai, but I highly doubt that these measures are going to evolve to the level of cutting ties with the Israeli entity. Otherwise, they would have recalled their ambassadors from the Israeli entity. I mean, UAE has an ambassador.
Yes, but another scenario says that the UAE, the Israel, gained some kind of a green light from these countries, and that's what allowed it to actually move further.
Well,
and attack Qatar.
If the Israelis did not understand the mentality and psychology of the Arab states, well, it wouldn't have done this.
Okay.
They know that there's not going to be any reaction, and they know that petty grievances reign supreme when it comes to these matters. So they will do whatever they want, and the Arabs will continue to fight among each other.
Okay. However, the Zionist aggression on the port of Hodeidah and the swift of Yemeni missile response was the focus of commentary in the Hebrew media, where one commentator paused at the speed of the Yemeni response to the Israeli attack. Actually, what struck me here was the question of the anchor about the humiliation and the humiliation faced by the Israeli entity when, of course, Yemenis retaliated immediately on the very same day when the port of Hodeidah was attacked by the Israelis.
But the thing is, it's not only a humiliation to the Israelis, it's also a humiliation to Qatar and every other nation that got hit or received any harm from the Israelis and never retaliated directly. At the end of the day, the Yemenis understand that the only language that the Israeli entity as a colonial entity understands is power and force. So by them retaliating, the Israelis actually got slapped in the face because they couldn't at any point stop the past missiles, and they couldn't destroy what you call the capabilities of the Yemenis in terms of continuing to throw missiles. Even if they intercept the missiles, that means disruption of the economic activity in the Israeli entity, because everybody will jump to the shelters no matter what. Mm-hmm. That's a disruption of a few hours, and that cost them a ton of money.
Okay. Now, moving on to the tensions and relations between President Trump and India after he imposed customs tariffs of 50% on it. This has caused Israeli concern over economic and security cooperation between the entity and India. Will the deterioration between the relationship between the United States and India automatically lead to the deterioration between Israel and India, especially now that Israel is suffering from economic isolation?
Well, not necessarily, and I would love to see where the economic isolation is. I mean, the Yemenis are the ones enforcing what you call maritime isolation when it comes to trade, maritime trade on the Israeli entity. But they still receive basically goods from Turkey, from other European nations, and the U.S. through the Mediterranean at any point, through shipment.
But Netanyahu even spoke about isolation.
They can speak about isolation all they want. They use it as an excuse to show the world that they are victims. Watch it. Like, oh, we are isolated. This is anti-Semitic. They try to play the victim on anything and everything. When it comes to India, India owns the port of Haifa. This is something that not everybody knows. The Israelis sold port of Haifa to an Indian company, and it's being run by a Chinese company that under the table has direct ties with the Chinese government. So when you look at the whole situation, this nagging on TV is one thing. Reality on the ground, it tells you that they have good relations with the Indians. The trade corridor that India announced that passes through the GCC to
it's not related to the good relationship with the United States.
It has nothing to do with the United States at the end of the day. And when it comes to tariffs being imposed on India, they will be renegotiated no matter what. The Americans, at the end of the day, they need India as well. So when it comes to Trump, look at him. He threatened several countries, and then they all negotiated.
But why is this a madness here that's expressed in these reports? They're furious about this deteriorating relationship between the U.S. and the Indians.
How much you want to bet that he doesn't know anything about the economy? I mean, talk is very easy for people.
But they're frustrated.
No. Like, he's frustrated because he doesn't understand economic ties. When the Indians, the GCC, the Americans, the Israelis, and the Egyptians, along with the Europeans, have all agreed on the trade corridor that goes from India through the GCC to Eastern Mediterranean, Israeli entity, all the way to Cyprus and Europe, that means everybody had agreed to it. It's isolated from what you call political row or anything else. Mm-hmm. The Indians still want that trade route because it will bring them tens of billions of dollars. The same thing goes for the Israelis, same thing goes for the Europeans. The Americans will benefit from that because now they have presence in the Eastern Mediterranean region, and everybody's going to be happy. When it comes to the tariffs, it's something that the American president is using as what you call show business. Mm-hmm. He's trying to enforce what you call negotiations to renegotiate the tariffs on either side, and that's it. It's not going to impact the Israelis at all.
So this fear is not justified?
No, it's not. And when you hear the Israelis saying, like, oh, we fear that India is being pushed into the hands of Xi Jinping, the Chinese president. Mm-hmm. They are one of the biggest trade partners with the Israelis are the Chinese. So the Chinese are not their foe. They are their friends at the end of the day.
Okay, Leila Hatoum, Editor-in-Chief, MENA Uncensored, thank you very much for joining us in this episode.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today's episode begins with a question. Why was Prophet Ibrahim, or Abraham, called Khalilullah in the Quran, the intimate friend of Allah, of God? Many think it's about love, and yes, love is part of it, but there is a deeper layer shared by Imam Askari alayhi salam as he interprets the Prophet's words. Khalil comes not just from love, he says, but from khilla. You know, love is khulla, and he says, but also from khilla, which means poverty and complete dependence. Ibrahim alayhi salam was poor to God alone. Was poor to God alone. He was disconnected from all else and content with only God. So this is what the Imam alayhi salam says, which is very insightful. Let's dive into it. Imagine it. Ibrahim alayhi salam has been condemned to death by fire. He's tied to a catapult, flying through the air toward a blazing pit. God sends Jibreel to offer help. Jibreel or Gabriel to offer help. He says, "Ask me anything. I've been sent to save you." And Ibrahim replied, "God is enough for me and the best to rely on. I ask of no one but him." Look, compare this to ourselves, what we do, what we think in our daily lives. This moment is the birth of khilla, not weakness, not despair, but radical independence from creation and total dependence on the Creator. That's what made him a friend of God, because he had no other hope but him. Let's turn to psychology. Studies in resilience and trauma recovery show something fascinating. People who survive extreme hardship, war, disease, injustice, and still thrive often share one trait: secure inner anchoring, a sense there is a higher purpose, a bigger presence, something constant in a chaotic world. This is what spiritual psychologists call transcendent trust. Transcendent trust. It's not passivity, it's active surrender. It brings peace, not by fixing everything, but by freeing us from needing to control everything. Just like Ibrahim alayhi salam in the air, you might be flying into fire in your own life, but if your soul is tied to God, the fire won't burn you. Your trust becomes your shield. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا.
القرآن نور وبيان، القرآن هدي الإيمان، القرآن مسك الختام، يا قرآن عليك سلام.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners listening to Arab English Radio right now, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we will be practicing verse number 19 and 20, two verses from Surah Al-Ra'd on page 252, top of the page, right?
Yes.
So brothers and sisters, hope you have the Quran with you. Please turn to page 252, top of the page, Surah Al-Ra'd, verse number 19 and 20, right?
Yes.
Ready to listen to a beautiful recitation.
Let's go with this one.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. أفمن يعلم أنما أنزل إليك من ربك الحق كمن هو أعمى إنما يتذكر أولو الألباب.
Then is he who knows that what has been revealed to you from your Lord is the truth, like one who is blind? They will only be reminded who are a people of understanding.
الَّذِينَ يُوفُونَ بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ وَلَا يَنْقُضُونَ الْمِيثَاقَ.
Those who fulfill the covenant of Allah and do not break the contract.
Nice recitation, mashallah. Mashallah. Thanks, Masoom, for your recommendation. That was nice. Thanks, Masoom, for your suggestion. That was very good. I enjoyed it. So, Surah Al-Ra'd, page 252, top of the page, verse number 19. Let's see what Allah Almighty says first in this ayah, then inshallah talk about the next ayah. Too many good points are here, okay? I really want you to refer to the Tafsir books, inshallah, to learn all of them. Because we don't have much time, we just mentioned two, three points just to have learned something from these two verses. Okay. Verse number 19, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty says أفمن يعلم becomes أفمن يعلم أفمن يعلم أنما أنزل إليك من ربك الحق كمن هو أعمى. Is someone who knows, this is a question, is someone who knows that what has been sent down to you from your Lord is the truth, is this person like someone who is blind? No. All right? No. Of course, the one who knows, the one who has faith, the one who believes, the one who knows, the one who understands, is what? Not comparable to the one who is blind. Now, in this one does not mean he is blind, like his two eyes are blind, okay? He can't see with his two eyes. No, his heart, his soul is blind. Understood? So next, إِنَّمَا يَتَذَكَّرُ أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ. إِنَّمَا يَتَذَكَّرُ أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ. Only those who possess intellect take admonition. They understand. They are the reminding people. Okay? So guys, it means that some people are there, they disbelieve in Quran, they do not accept the Quran, they do not accept Prophet, they do not accept Islam, they do not accept Allah, they do not, these kind of things. So the reason is clear, the reason is very clear. First and foremost, they don't let themselves understand. They don't let themselves understand, okay? And if they want, because we have free will, if they want, they can go and learn about it. Just go learn about it. Finally, you either stay the same person or you will get changed. If that makes sense, you will become a believer. If that doesn't make sense to you, so continue being a disbeliever. Stay on your path, okay? But there is no one in the world, you can't find anyone who should be seeing, who should be knowing and seeing the reasons, the proofs, okay, and not believing. If you can find it, tell me. Except those who are doing it on purpose. Except those who are doing it on purpose and they're deceiving themselves. All right? Yeah. But the proofs and reasons that the Quran brings us and gives us about the existence of God, about the existence of Day of Judgment, and whatever, okay? They all are understandable. They all make clear sense. So, Masum, would you please recite the first ayah once?
Yes.
Yeah, let's listen, everyone.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أفمن يعلم أنما أنزل إليك من ربك الحق كمن هو أعمى
أحسنتم أفمن يعلم حسن how do I read this أفمن يعلم I merge them. So the ya is doubled, noon is omitted. So meem is joined to the ya. Afa man no may. This is called qa'idatul idgham, right? Afa may. You extend the sound as well. Not afa may ya'lam. No. Afa may. Extend the sound. Yeah, and also nasal sound. Afa may. See? أَفَمَنْ يَعْلَمُ أَنَّمَا أُنْزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ الْحَقُّ So, أَنَّمَا نُون carries a شَدَّة Whenever نُون carries a شَدَّة ميم carries a شَدَّة These two letters should be pronounced with a nasal sound. Plus
extension.
An extension for two beats. Annama, don't say annama, annama, no, not fast. Annama, a little stretch it, okay?
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Unzila, unzila, noon sakin. And wait, annama has got a mad. Is that mad wajib?
No.
No, it's jais. You can extend it or you can skip it. أَنَّمَا أُنزِلَ Actually, mad is for extension. But when we say it's jais, it means it's jais to ignore it. Skip it, not extend it. أَنَّمَا أُنزِلَ You hide the sound of noon here. قَعِدَةُ الْإِخْفَى أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ How do you say that?
مِنْ رَبِّكَ
مِنْ رَبِّكَ قَعِدَةُ الْإِدْغَامِ مِنْ رَبِّكَ الْحَقُّ كَمَنْ هُوَ أَعْمَى What does that jim tell us, Hassan? Tell us, come on.
Jim allows us to make a pause.
Allows you to make a pause. If you're running out of breath, you are allowed to make a pause. All right? Yes. Next part, move on. Innama nun mushaddad, remember it.
Innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab.
Ahsandam. Do you see that? Wow, after the ulul. Ulu, the word ulu. You ignore that well. You don't read it. You don't say ulul albab innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab. No. Innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab. not ooh, do not extend it. Ulul albab,